What up, Canes fans? Before we get started, just wanted to talk to you guys about the Tank Brewery real quick. The Tank is located in the heart of Miami in Dade County at 5100 Northwest 72nd Avenue. This place is awesome. I've been there. The beer is outstanding. The food is great. Whether you're watching the Canes game, the Heat game there with your buddies, you're having a guys' night out, or you're having a date night with the missus, it's a great place to hang out. So you can order online at thetankbrewingtakeout.com or call them at 786-801-1554 for delivery or pickup. And here's the thing. If you use the promo code TANK4SUP, you will get free delivery on game days. And so that is TANK4SUP, the number four. Not spell it out, but TANK4SUP. So go check out our friends at the Tank Brewing. They've been great to us. So take it away, Jordan.
All right. Also, we want you guys to check out our guy, Stickers by AB. That's at STICKERZ by AB. You know, I've been ordering a bunch of stuff from him. You know, we have a collaboration sticker that has our logo on it. So make sure you're checking him out. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's just a good dude, and he's helping us design our merch. So yeah, man, it's make sure you're supporting the good people that help us out here on Fours Up.
You're listening to the Fours Up podcast with your host Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is the Fours Up podcast. It's Wednesday, October 14th, and we are still, we're not sad.
We're alive.
We're alive. We are alive. It was a rough sports weekend, and Jordan and I just felt the burden of the world crashing down upon us. Jordan, just how are you? How's the last week been?
Dude. I don't know. It's been horrible, man. It's been horrible. I mean, watching the Canes just get dumped on, and then, I mean, Twitter has just been an awful place the last few days since then. And then, you know, my Bills, wow, just didn't even show up to Tennessee last night, man. So, I mean, it's whatever.
But, I won my bet.
Well.
I finally won a bet.
Well, I didn't win anything this week, so good for you, man.
Dude, this rivaled one of the worst sports weekends of my life, if I can just run down my shit show of the Friday through Sunday. So the Heat lose the finals.
Mm-hmm.
The Yankees get knocked out of the playoffs. The Canes get embarrassed by Clemson. And Dak Prescott is knocked out for the entire season.
Yeah.
So it
it's pretty rough, man.
That it was extremely, extremely rough. And so yeah. I don't want to spend too much time on this Clemson game because I just can't talk about it anymore. But give me your initial thoughts from the game.
Well, here's the thing, man. And
how the hell did I predict a win?
Well, what? I don't.
Why did I buy into the enthusiasm?
I don't know, man. I mean, we were all feeling it, though, you know? Like, even though I predicted an 11-point loss, like, I didn't expect that.
No.
You know?
No
I, one. Yeah. I don't want to spend too much time patting myself on the back. But, you know, like, you guys all need to understand how right I was after the UAB game, you know? Like, UAB showed us exactly what kind of team we are, right? In that, and UAB was the second best team that we've played. I think that's pretty clear now. I mean, if you watch that game and then watch the Clemson game, it looks like we're playing, you know, it looks like UAB was Clemson JV. Because yeah.
They showed us a lot of the similar stuff on defense, I feel like.
Yes.
But because Clemson is just Clemson, I mean, obviously it didn't work as well. And so, and at times it seems like we struggled for those 31 points against UAB. And yeah. Man, I think we had 210 yards of total offense against Clemson. And
yeah,
that's just that it was, It was painful at times to watch our offense.
Yep, and so UAB, they really exposed our interior D linemen. You know, getting run on, they exposed our linebacking core.
Ugh.
You know, our corners looked horrible in that game. I actually think our corners, you know, have gotten a lot better. So I'm not going to pick on them right now. But I also think the pass blocking, man. UAB exposed the pass blocking, and that was horrible against Clemson. Like, it really was. You know, like, I was trying to not buy into the O-line. It looked better in run blocking concepts rather than pass blocking. But, dude, our pass blocking is just horrible, dude. Our line literally did not get better at all.
I think it's gotten better. I mean, compared to last year when we gave up the most sacks in Power 5, it's gotten better. And, I mean, Louisville and Florida State, it looked pretty good. I mean, our offensive line hadn't given up a sack by themselves until Clemson. But, man, they just got abused.
Yes, I do think that stat's a little misleading, though, because against Florida State was it Florida State or Louisville? I can't remember. But one of those, there was a certain lineman that I was, you know, keying in on in my rewatch, and he would go whole downs where he didn't touch anyone, dude. He just didn't know his assignments. And it's like, you know, and King took hits, and there was one that he got just absolutely wrecked. And they didn't count as sacks, but that doesn't matter, right? Like, he's still not doing his job. It's still negatively impacting the play. Exactly. And, dude, I don't know. I feel like I have a pretty good feel for this Hurricanes team now after watching the first four games of the season.
I think that we're going to get a lot better feel for the team after the Pitt game on Saturday.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. I think, I mean, in years past, this is where the season has gone haywire. When we come off a loss against a big team in a big game. And the question is, can we bounce back?
Yep.
Can we prove that that loss to Clemson was because, you know, they're better than us? I mean, that's plain and simple. Last year, you know, a loss would turn into four straight losses. That cannot happen. I still think that this team is more than capable of winning 9 to 10 games in the regular season. I completely believe that. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and so you bring up the only caveat to what, you know, to what I'm going to say here is, you know, we've folded mentally and emotionally, like, you know, after a loss. So if we can avoid that, I feel like I have a pretty good feel for this team. And I think we're in the, like, I would slot us in the 8 to 9 win range. I'm not sure that we're going to take care of business against everyone. You know, that, like, I'm not sure that we're better than UNC, and now I'm worried about the Virginia Tech game.
I told you.
And here's why, is because we got exposed by UAB. You know, like, we can say that that was the first game and that's all well and good, but the same problems that popped up after the UAB game that we were all talking about, and, you know, a lot of people were upset that we were talking about the problems, right? They're like, it's the first game, don't just, you know, erase it from your memory. However, those exact same things is what we saw Clemson exploit. And so when we're playing better teams like Virginia Tech and UNC, like, we're going to see those same themes. We're going to be like, man, our linebackers are not good. You know, man, we cannot stop the run up the middle of the field. Like, man, we are getting stretched out horizontally. Or, you know, man, we cannot protect De'Eriq King when he needs to pass, you know, stuff like that. Like,
the biggest thing for me is the we had so many chances to get into that game.
Yeah.
The one big one that sticks out to me is on Clemson, the very first drive of the game, Quincy Roche picks off Trevor Lawrence, call offsides.
Yeah.
That was a killer. And then I think it was in the third quarter, or maybe when we were down 14-3, and De'Eriq King goes off for like a 40-50 yard run, and then he throws an interception.
Yeah.
I feel like there were chances for us. It was similar to the 2017 ACC championship game against them, where we had chances early, but there's only, you can only hang around with Clemson for so long. They are, I think it's more of a testament to them more than it is so a downgrade to us, if that makes sense. They are just a well-oiled machine. I mean, their defense, I watched so many hours of film on their defense. They don't have many guys on there that is like, they don't have like an Isaiah Simmons or anybody like that, but they're just so well-disciplined and so bought into that defensive and offensive system. They know what they're doing at all times. They don't make mistakes.
Yeah, it's true.
And it was incredible. Like, it was like, yeah, it was just, it was humbling. It was definitely humbling.
It was, and I know I've spent the first part of this episode just raking our defense over the coals, but I want to say this to make it very clear. Our defense gave us plenty of chances to stay in that game. You know, special teams was incredible. Other than, Xavier Restrepo having a mental error with the punter.
I don't know what that was.
Yeah. I mean, our special teams was, it was an A. It was an A minus. I'll give us a minus because of Restrepo's just mental errors, right? But it was, our special teams were really, really great. And then the defense, I thought, especially in the early third quarter, I mean, what was it? It was like, what was the score after we returned that kick?
21-10.
Yeah, 21-10. So we got like two or three stops in a row to start off the second half. If your offense can do anything, you're right in the game.
Yeah.
So I mean, I know it's like in vogue to hate on Blake Baker, and I'm not even sticking up for him in the long run. Because I'm wondering if he's overmatched myself, right? But I don't think this game was like, I'm not blaming Blake Baker for this loss.
No.
It was a thorough beating. Like, Rhett Lashley got just as outcoached as Blake Baker did, if not more so. And that doesn't mean that I've lost faith.
And sorry to cut you off, but I just wanted to point out, Rhett Lashley took full responsibility for it, too.
Yeah.
Like, you hear game comments, and that was definitely something that I really respected because we haven't seen that in past years to that effect. Yeah. And I think we're going to come out and beat the shit out of Pitt on Saturday. I really do, man. I really do. But with that, what do you say we bring on our guests? All right, we are back, and we are joined by Bill and Chris. They are writers from Canes Insight. They also help run the Canes Legacy Twitter account. Boys, what is up? How are we doing? How are we feeling?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad, man. Not too bad.
It's, I mean, coming off a loss, you know, we don't want to spend too much time on this Clemson game, but, you know, we're doing all right. We're doing okay. I do want to get your guys' quick thoughts on that massacre that happened on Saturday night. So, Bill, I'll ask you first, and then Chris, you can respond. I just want your quick initial thoughts from that game, where you see this team going, and everything you thought about on Saturday night.
Yeah, my initial reaction was I'm disappointed, but not because we lost. Clemson is a powerhouse program. They're in the middle of a dynasty. There's no shame in losing to that. What I was most disappointed in was kind of how we lost. You know, the undiscipline, the penalties, coming out flat, looking unprepared, not having an answer for pretty much anything Clemson did. So to me, disappointment was the word. But brighter days are ahead. Most of us predicted a 9-2, 8-3 type season. You know, so the losses have to come from somewhere, and Clemson was the first loss.
Good point.
You know, so I think this team will bounce back. I have confidence in King and Lashley, to counter whatever the defense are going to throw at them in the future now that the blueprint is out. But I think brighter days are ahead.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Chris, what about you?
So, a lot of the same. And, you know, like Bill said, we expected there to be losses in there. And I think, you know, we all kind of get caught in the hype of, you know, it being Clemson week. You know, we're ranked number 7. Kind of like a couple years ago when we ranked really high and we started thinking that we were, you know, going to run the table and do all these things when the ranking really wasn't a legitimate seven because of all the teams that weren't playing yet. But you get caught up in that hype because you remember all the games against the number one seeds and thinking we could do that. But Clemson is on another tier than us. And, you know, like they said, we tried to do as much as we could to, like, say, well, if we give them this kind of game, then it's going to be something we can count on and build on. And yeah, we didn't end up giving them that kind of game. But still, you know, it's a strong team, and we've done some damage early in the season. So no reason why we can't keep that going.
Well, so I have a quick question for both of you. You know, this is my last question in regards to the Clemson game. I'm actually excited to not talk about it anymore because it was horrible. But there was a very clear and distinct disadvantage, might be the right word, that we had at two specific position groups, and that is wide receiver and linebacker. Where that, I mean, to me, that was the two position groups where it just looked like we did not belong on the same field as Clemson at those two position groups. We don't have nearly the talent nor the depth, and it really just made it hard for us to stay in the game. I mean, we kept getting exposed in more than one way, but I think those were the two most blatant areas. Where do we go from here? You know, how do we rebuild this wide receiver room, and what do we do for the rest of this season?
So I'll start. I think with, you know, specifically the wide receivers, they're just not a physical bunch. You know, they don't fight for those 50-50 balls. They have trouble, you know, using their bodies to, you know, create a little contact to box out the cornerback. They're just not a physical group. And, you know, Clemson knew that, and they knew that they had the speed to run with them. And they knew that once the ball was in the air, that they were going to win those matchups. I do have faith in Rob Likens, our wide receiver coach. You know, he knows talent. He's had two first-round draft picks recently. So it may take some time to get this room right. You know, the guys may be on the roster in terms of our, you know, younger guys, our true freshmen that just came in our incoming class. You know, especially Breshard Smith, who I'm super high on. I think he's going to be a stud level.
Love him.
Yes. Yeah, not to go too much into it, but I remember watching his highlights after he decommitted from Florida, and I was absolutely blown away that he was just a lower four-star in most of the rankings. But, yeah, I think help is on the way. You know, Likens is a proven wide receiver coach, but I think it's time that we probably get, you know, some of these younger guys some reps, because what's the worst that could happen, that they don't fight for the 50-50 balls that they have dropped, that they don't make? I know it sounds harsh, but I think it's the truth.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, Chris, give your thoughts on the wide receiver room, because I am thoroughly disappointed in them. I thought Mike Harley was going to have a much bigger season. Both Jordan and I had D. Wiggins as a breakout star, and I think he may or may not play this Saturday. I know that I've heard rumblings that he's hurt. But what? Give me your thoughts on the wide receiver room.
Well, I think the first thought I had when Rob Likens came in was, like, all the excitement because of all the great things he had done, especially at Arizona State, you know, turning these guys into number one picks. And, you know, if you really think about it, it takes so much to have a guy become that level. And the most important thing is to want to be great and to want to be an elite wide receiver. And I just haven't seen it. Like, the 50-50 balls, that's, like, an indicator of a much bigger problem, with a willingness to kind of put themselves out there. And I know it's kind of like picking at something odd, but, like, just in terms of physicality, like, how much weight and muscle have these guys put on since they've been at Miami? You know, you got to figure a couple years in a college weight room that these guys would be ready to roll physically, especially 3 years in. That's about the time when the NFL starts kind of looking around and you expect these guys to be pro level. And I just haven't seen it. Meanwhile, you have X coming in who's already looking like he's physically ready to play college ball. Michael Redding was physically ready to play college ball when he was at IMG, because that's what they get them ready to do. You know, so you have guys that physically look like they can go out there and thrive. So I would let the young guys out there. Same thing for the linebacker room. You know, you can't be worried about guys that aren't producing. You have to be worried about guys who are going to produce. And I would give the young guys all the opportunities in the world to take those spots.
I think you I could not agree more with that point. I know that a lot of people, when you talk about the linebacker room, oh, you know, Zach McLeod, he's coming. He came back for his fifth year. This is why he came back. But I'm like, he's not doing anything. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It sucks to say, because We actually had an NFL draft guy come on the show probably like back in March or April. He said that, you know, he was going to be more productive. Zach McLeod would be more productive than Shaq Quarterman was and Pinckney was their senior years. And I was super, super excited for McLeod and just to see him. But, man, when you watch the tape and you watch the game film, it's shocking how just how slow him and Jennings are. And it sucks to say, but do you guys want to see – would you guys be surprised and Bill, you answer first. Would you be surprised to see or I guess do you want to see Sam Brooks start on Saturday?
Yes. Yes, I think Sam Brooks should have been starting from the very beginning. You know, and we talk about the linebacker room. I think the linebacker room has the answers in it. They just need to get on the field. You know, one of my thoughts on this game was – you know, Clemson exposed us by playing sideline to sideline, you know, throwing the flat tight ends and letting their guys be faster than ours because our linebackers are slow. We're the University of Miami. We're born with speed at linebacker. It used to be, you know, crazy talk to say, okay, we're going to attack them, you know, going laterally because, you know, we would just hunt them down. But now, you know, that's how you expose us. So if I was Baker and Packy and Manny, Sam Brooks would be starting, and I would also be looking, you know, to start someone else as well, whether that's Corey Flagg, whether it's working in, you know, Tyreek Austin-Cave, who can run, Avery Huff. I know that there's issues maybe, you know, learning the playbook. But the mistakes that are being made, you know, it's not just physical with this linebacker duo of Jennings and McLeod. You know, it's mental, too. You know, they don't know who to cover. We posted a clip. You know, on Sunday morning of the second Galloway touchdown, McLeod is dancing, going sideline to side, or going side to side. He doesn't know where to go. And next thing you know, you're walking in for an easy touchdown.
Yeah.
So there's mental mistakes too, in addition to the physical ones. And you know, like I said about the wide receivers, you know, why not throw out a younger guy and see if they can match it? Because, you know, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah,
go ahead, Jordan.
I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. I mean, one thing I've noticed with McLeod, like you said, on the mental side of things, like his reaction time is just slow. So even when he is diagnosing a play, like, you know, it's just like he gets off the line slow. You know, he's I don't know, man. I'm frustrated. I wasn't high on McLeod coming into this year because I just figured, like, you know, he's like, why would we expect him to be two guys that have been ahead of him on the depth chart for the last 4 years. You know, so I'm with you. I really want to see Corey Flagg and Tyreek Austin-Cave get some burn. And there's just, it couldn't be much worse right now. I mean, really the four of us could be the two deep at linebackers and it really wouldn't be much worse. So
I was surprised, you know, when I was covering the team during fall camp just a few months ago, and McLeod was speaking so high of Bradley Jennings Jr. That was really, it wasn't shocking, but I was definitely pleasantly surprised. I don't think anyone really expected him to go into a starting role at the beginning of the year. I personally thought it was going to be Sam Brooks. I think a lot of us did. I want to ask you your guys' opinion on the offense. Obviously, 210 yards of total offense is not going to get it done. I think we were all a little shocked to see that decrease of production from the first 3 weeks to Clemson. Obviously, it's Clemson. You know, they're a very well-coached team. But do you see Pitt playing us and the rest of the teams on our schedule? Do you guys see their defense playing us very similar to Clemson, you know, when they're stacking the box and everything like that?
Well, for sure they're going to go off the game plan that Clemson kind of laid out for everybody. And, you know, you guys were talking before about the two positions where it really stood out where we weren't as good as Clemson. I viewed it from like there was three spots where their guys guarding our guys or their guys up against our guys were at a clear disadvantage. Or we were at a disadvantage with our linebackers versus their back at ATN. It was no shot. Our receivers against the physicality of their corners, no shot. Our offensive line against their defensive line was just as much of a physical mismatch as anything else that we saw, which was really the most concerning thing because that's some place where we saw progress early in the season you know, we started kind of thinking like, you know, maybe this could be something. But I think we saw a few spots, especially on the interior. If DJ Scaife isn't going to be the player we thought he was supposed to be, then we have to come up with another plan for that right away, because he was supposed to be the anchor on the interior, not the guy that we look at and say, you know, you should have been, you were supposed to be. Because already you got Clark, who is a nice player, but really ideally he's a center where you can let some of the physical limitations go. So you have those guys out there, which makes it tough. And then you have Pitt, who has an outstanding defensive line too, and they're going to do their best to kind of muck things up in the middle, and they're going to send linebackers in support, and they're going to make a ton of tackles for loss like Clemson did. So I think we have to figure out a way to get De'Ara King either moving laterally off the snap to keep them from being able to rush upfield so quickly like they were against Clemson, or at the very least start doing some pop passes over the middle to keep the linebackers more honest.
So I wanted to ask you a question piggybacking off of that. You know, you mentioned that we saw some offensive line progress. You know, I didn't love our pass protection against UAB. I thought it really picked up, especially against Florida State. I thought Louisville, our pass blocking was a little shaky still, even though the run blocking was much better. How much of that do you think is scheme versus actual talent, the progress we saw? Because I mean, I got in a lot of trouble for saying this on Twitter, but I just said, like, our offensive line doesn't look more talented than last year. It just looks like, you know, between Garen Justice and Rhett Lashley, like we have a smarter game plan and how to utilize our linemen and, you know, minimize what, like, the problems that are going on. But really, I mean, there's been times where we look like the same sorry squad from last season.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, we had a young offensive line last year. They're just going to be naturally better because they're bigger. You know, they've been in the program. They know what they're, you know, what to be used to in terms of, you know, the talent that they're facing. The scheme definitely helps. You know, I think when we play defensive lines like Clemson and, you know, probably on Pitt on Saturday, you know, they're going to expose, you know, the talent because they're, you know, they're two of the best defensive lines in the country. You know, when we're playing, you know, UAB and Louisville and Florida State, where their defensive lines aren't that good, you know, the scheme's really going to take over and we're going to be able to play fast and King's going to get the ball out quick. We're going to be running. But once, you know, Clemson really dominated the offensive line, you know, we had no counter for that whatsoever. You know, so we're going to learn a lot on Saturday, you know, about the team in general, but specifically about the offensive line. You know, can they learn from what went wrong against Clemson and, you know, learn how to counter, you know, those different pressures and stunts and everything that's going to be thrown their way?
Yeah. Chris, what do you think?
Well, I think a big part of it is the scheme is so vital to have these guys succeed. And I think Lashley can do that, but he just got – it was just one of those days where Venables was so into our game plan and knowledgeable of what we wanted to do, probably because that, you know, Auburn and Malzahn had played such high-profile games over the years against such elite opponents that he had a lot of stuff on tape for the kinds of offenses that Lashley would probably want to utilize. And he made our guys second guess things that they were doing more naturally in the first 3 weeks than they tried to learn in the last little bit of summer. Had we had spring to get some like momentum together and had these guys develop chemistry, it probably would have been a little bit different. But Venables knew the deal and he sent guys at us that we didn't expect and we didn't know how to adjust to. Against Pitt, we need to make sure that we have, like, much like Zach McLeod has issues whenever he has to think. And he can't just react instantly because his feet start going all over the place. We need to make their guys think and not just immediately react and rush upfield. And it's doable with Lashley's offense. We saw some of the things that he was able to do, like running that QB power and then giving Cam Harris all those options because people are still worried about the QB power early in the season. That's the kind of stuff that we have to do to let them think that there's two options, three options that come out of each alignment, each potential play call, so they can't tee off in the way they were. And Lashley can do it. We just got to see the team execute.
I know I'm switching back and forth between the offense and defense, but a lot of people were unhappy with Blake Baker after Saturday's performance, and I think a lot of people have been questioning his defense really since he got here, but especially this season. I want to know two things from you guys. One, do you want to see Manny Diaz call the defense, you know, be the play caller for the defense? And two, if Blake Baker you know, obviously he has to improve in play calling for the defense. What would you suggest, and, you know, what do you think the defense needs to get better at?
I think if Manny's going to be the one calling plays, then Baker has to go. Yeah, there's no point in having a defensive coordinator if you're just going to run the defense yourself. We're four games in. You know, there's a lot of time for, you know, the defense to improve, to make strides, and, you know, make progress. But, you know, the thing we have to realize, it's 2020. It's spread offenses all the time. There's points galore. You know, you look at what happened in Alabama, Ole Miss, you know, over 1,000 yards of offense, and, you know, the vaunted Nick Saban defense, you know, giving up 40-plus points. So, you know, things are going to happen. You know, this is a powerhouse team that we went up against, and especially with Travis Etienne, who's probably the best quarterback running back duo in college football history. So, you know, Baker has a ways to go. There needs to be some personnel changes, get more speed on the field, you know, especially at linebacker, like we talked about. You know, they need to keep loading up on good athletes, you know, on the defensive side. You know, we have James Williams, Leonard Taylor coming in. That's going to help. But, you know, we can't keep recruiting, you know, the slow linebackers and sticking them out there and getting exposed. So I think if we make the right personnel decisions and a couple scheme tweaks, you know, we can get back to being, you know, a pretty good defense like we've seen the last few years.
I agree. I think, I mean, if you look at since Manny Diaz has gotten here, we've really struggled to recruit linebackers. Like that is, if you just go by recruiting rankings, that is our biggest lack of talent on paper. And I think that is showing out. You know, we really need to get some of these higher profile guys because, you know, we're starting to land big time safeties. And I mean, we've been a defensive end factory, you know, and we're starting to get a lot more talent on the interior. It's really just, I mean, corners and linebackers that we've really struggled to recruit. So, you know, to Manny's credit, he has shown the ability to do self-evaluation and to look in the mirror and realize what needs to get better. I really hope that he assesses the recruiting at the linebacker position, because, I mean, we're just going to keep being overmatched there. You know, I think we got a little comfortable having Shaq and Pinckney here for 4 years. And I mean, now look, it's a mess.
Yeah. And on that note about the linebackers, especially how we've been recruiting them, like with the kinds of guys that we've had success with, and, you know, people, you know, you say Shaq and Pinckney, they had a good run, but Shaq and Pinckney were at their best when they had a defensive line, specifically one with an interior pass rusher who could keep pressure off of them and safeties behind that both did a really strong job of alleviating those big plays. Like I know that some of the talk this week has been about how many plays of 10 plus yards we've given up. And that's entirely due to the second level of the defense. Those are the guys who are supposed to keep a 5 yard gain from becoming a 12 yard gain. That's their job. That's their role. And we don't have speed there. We don't have great instincts there. So we got to figure that out. And you guys kind of talked about before, but about getting those guys in, I feel like we have to kind of adjust the thought process about, you know, this is the size of a linebacker. This is the, you know, and go back to, you know, we're kind of an old school thought process with our Twitter account and all, but you go back to that old school mentality. We move Gill up from safety, or even like some people were saying corner, and now he's basically playing strong side linebacker. Like that's effectively what a striker is. He's a Sam in space. So we got him up there, and he's been our best second level defender. Like whenever Keontre's out there, he's probably our second best second level defender. Now, there's no reason why both of those guys can't be on the field at once, just to kind of cause havoc. Let them run alleys. Let our defensive line, who's like really as good as Roche is at rushing the passer on occasions, really our defensive line strength is the ability to kind of hold court and like hold the line and, you know, keep people off of the linebackers, because our linebackers have room to run. They just don't know where to go. So I'd rather have speed in that second level, get Brooks, Smith, Frierson, and let them run sideline to sideline and, you know, make some plays on the outside. And for as far as next year, like Billy was saying, we have James Williams and Chase Smith and those guys coming in. Like long term, those are second level defenders. Like Chase Smith and James Williams should be linebackers / strikers, and have them up closer to the line of scrimmage to eliminate mistakes. Like we're seeing so prominently this year how many mistakes that we can make at the second level. They're those guys that can eliminate those mistakes, get big tackles for losses by running the alley, and turn this defense back into something we can be proud of.
Yes. Hell yes. I mean, that is perfect, man. I love that. I've been so – I mean, all offseason I was really high on Gil Frierson. And I'm very, very – I'm very pleased with what he's doing. I think, you know, all of us can agree on that. How would you grade? I mean, obviously Jalen and Quincy are doing pretty good. You know, I thought the sack number would be a little bit higher, but you know, as long as they're getting to the quarterback and creating havoc in the backfield, you know, sometimes that's almost as good as a sack. Our interior defensive, our defensive tackles. Nesta has, he's been mostly pretty good this year, but how would you guys grade that unit as for defensive tackles as a whole? Because I am not very pleased with John Ford, and Jordan Miller has been up and down as well. So how would you grade the defensive tackles so far?
I think they've been okay, average for, you know, what we're used to at Miami. You know, Nesta's, you know, has been having a pretty solid year, at least up till the Clemson game. Jared Harrison Hunt, he's actually impressed. I think he's flashed quite a bit. You know, he's still a redshirt freshman, so he has a long ways to go. But John Ford, you know, is who he is. He's not going to be a playmaker. He's kind of, in my mind, kind of in that Pat Bethel type mold where, you know, he's in the rotation. You know, he'll make a tackle or two, but he's really not going to flash and be that, you know, playmaker that we need up front. And then, you know, Jordan Miller, I've actually been a little disappointed with him. He was kind of my breakout guy on defense for this year. I thought he looked really good last year in the limited snaps he got. But I really haven't seen, you know, too much impact from him at all. You know, but, you know, like Chris said, you know, that interior defensive tackle, you know, pass rush we have with Gerald Willis, RJ McIntosh, that's so critical for a Manny Diaz defense. And we just don't have that, you know, superstar in the middle right now.
Yeah. Chris, what do you I do want to point out on Jordan Miller, because I was the same way, Billy. Everybody said that he was, you know, going to be that breakout player on the defensive line because, you know, he flashed some things in last year's season, and I'm just not seeing it right now. And he had that major weight transformation from his freshman year to his redshirt freshman year. But I'm still Chris, what are your thoughts on the defensive tackles?
It's like you said, okay is probably the best way to rate it, because it's a bunch of guys that do kind of the same thing, especially Miller. Ford and Nesta, they're all space eating, you know, that you can't move them around too much, but you know, you can scheme around space eaters, you know, pretty easily on the interior if you don't have a guy to like to match them up next to that can actually get inside and create some havoc. Like you said about Pat Bethel, you could put Bethel next to an RJ McIntosh and you could succeed. You could have Kendrick Norton, who is more of a space eater type, against a McIntosh, and you do well. Bethel with Willis, that it works, but if you have two guys in there that are just kind of taking up space, it's hard. And especially with your ends. And, you know, Roche is a good player. I don't think he's like your traditional 4-3 defensive end, great, like all around pass rusher. I think he can very easily be neutralized by an offensive tackle that knows what he's doing. He has a couple great flashes here and there, but I would assume at the next level, he's probably a 3-4 outside linebacker who, you know, covers some, rushes some. And then you have Jalen Phillips, who has been playing awesome, phenomenal football, but he plays like football that isn't in the stat sheet. He's more of like a guy who holds the edge and like pushes it back to the middle, and you know, like even the sack he had last week was not because of, you know, him doing something crazy with the pass rush. Flag just got outside, and Phillips is just so strong and hard to contain that, you know, you can't give him an extra 2-3 seconds because he'll get to the quarterback. But so we have all these guys up front that, you know, are trying to just hold and wait for someone else to make a play, but we don't have anybody that can make a play. So That's why we get these, you know, these screenplays that kill us, because, you know, the first time they get through the line, they think, oh, I want to get a sack, but it's because they let him go through. So they just go out sprinting like crazy at the quarterback. They're not thinking like, oh, you know, this isn't really what I do. And you end up failing because of it.
Yep. Okay. So we're winding down here. You know, my last question for you guys, I'd love if you'd both answer, is like, give us the keys to this game against Pitt on Saturday. like from your perspective, what do we need to do to make sure that we win? And if you touch on both sides of the ball, you know, kind of keys to victory or a game plan or something along those lines.
For offensively, we need to get back to playing with tempo. You know, one of the things that Clemson did and did smartly, you know, they were aggressive. They created a lot of negative plays, which, you know, slowed us down. You know, you look at the play clock, we're used to snapping it, you know, in the 20s, you know, it was getting down into the teens, which really threw off our rhythm. You know, even Derek King had that big scramble. Dabo called timeout to stop the momentum, and they held us to a field goal. We were trying to get up, snap the ball, you know, get into a rhythm. They took it away. So we need to find a way to not let Pitt's defensive line cause havoc. You know, we need to, you know, stay ahead of the chains, keep that tempo momentum going, and someone on the outside has to step up. There's going to be opportunities, you know, whether that's Wiggins, Pope, Harley, one of the freshmen, one of those guys needs to step up and say, I can make a play when it's one-on-one. And then defensively, I think we'll get back, you know, to seeing what we're more used to against Pitt. You know, I don't think they're that good on offense. You know, Kenny Pickett's an experienced guy. He's been there forever. Their offensive line is okay. There's going to be sack opportunities. Mark Whipple, former Miami offensive coordinator, is their current offensive coordinator, and he likes to take shots down the field, which means that the quarterback has to hold the ball for a little bit. So I'm looking at the defensive line. You know, mainly the edge guys, Roche, Phillips, you know, they need to be able to get sacks, maybe even some strip sacks, get a turnover, and, you know, get the big momentum back on our side.
Yeah, I think a lot of what Billy said makes sense. And on the offensive side, the real thing that I'm going to look for is how we utilize space, you know, especially like early on in the game to get that momentum back, to get us on the right track. I think namely how we use like screens and play action pass, just kind of get things moving, but the defense has to kind of reconsider their quick upfield rush. Cause if from the jump, we start falling behind and we have to be forced into passing situations, it's going to be trouble. And then we need someone on the outside to step up, but we really need someone that can make a play in that like 10 to 15 yard range in the middle of the field too. So like if Brevin's still kind of banged up, we need Will Mallory to go out there and make some plays, because if you want to get those linebackers thinking twice, then you have someone kind of going in behind them and, you know, making some of those tough catches, kind of like we saw against Florida State early with Mallory's touchdown, where if you have a guy like that, like he is going to be an NFL player, you have to be able to take advantage of. You can't throw him two passes a game and be like, oh yeah, he'll make the league one day. No, let's use that talent now that he's a junior. He's pretty good. So I think he could have a big game too. And then that'll open up things on the outside once those safeties have to start second guessing where the passes are going to come from. And then on the flip side, on D, we got to get faster. We have to either simplify some things we need to do on that defense or start attacking a little bit more from that second level, but we need to be faster. So I would hope to see Brooks and Gill out there together quite a bit, with Smith hopefully a little bit, but otherwise flag as much as humanly possible. Even Steed can run, you know, even Steed, mm-hmm. after all the injuries, he can run a little bit too. So, you know, give him a shot, because worst case scenario, like on defense, if you're going to make a mistake and you're going to go to the wrong spot, at least get to the wrong spot quickly enough that you can correct yourself. You can't have a guy that runs a 4.7, 4.8, you know, chopping his feet and letting his tight end go by him and making a mistake. And I do think that Gervin Hall coming back is going to help that, because I do think that not having him for a section of the last game did hurt us, because he is probably our second best safety. He hasn't been great this year, but he's at least faster and he can get to spots and cover some people. So hopefully that helps us.
I mean, I could not agree with you more on the Will Mallory. I have been the president of the Will Mallory fan club since he came over. And the fact that he has, well, like three catches this year is ridiculous. And he definitely needs more targets, especially, if, you know, with Brevin being banged up. So my last question for you guys, I just need a score prediction for Saturday's game. So let's hear what you got.
I'll go Miami 34, Pitt 21.
Ooh, all right. 21. Okay. All right. What do you think, Chris?
I'm going to go Miami 31, Pitt 13.
Okay. All right. I'd be surprised because if Pitt, I'd be pissed off if Pitt scores more than 20 points, just because I heard Pickett has hurt his leg, so he can't, you know, he's not as mobile. And this offense just, I mean, you guys already touched on it. It's not that impressive, and this could be a very good defense for Miami. And I just want to see us bounce back and honestly just beat the hell out of these guys and just win by 20 points, you know, calm the fan base down a little bit. But I think both those are great predictions. Thank you guys so much though for coming on. We definitely have to do this again.
Anytime.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Jordan.
Yeah. All righty.
Cool. That was good Great. Stuff, man.
That was awesome. Those guys know their stuff and I love it. I love talking. Yeah. I love episodes when I could just like ask a question and let them go.
Yeah, for sure, dude. That's the best way to do it, right? Is you know, I don't pretend to know the most about the Canes, you know, I mean, even though I do, right? No, I'm just kidding. you know, it's always nice having guests that I can learn from, you know. They'll change my perspective on stuff. So yeah, shout out to Kane's Legacy, Chris and Bill. You know, you guys were awesome. So
absolutely. Right. Hey, is there anything else that we need to go over?
Well, I guess one last thing for you that I want to talk about is how about mental errors, man? Especially from our veterans. You know, back to the Clemson game. Sorry to bring it up again, but you know. Quincy Roche, you know, lines up offsides on that third down play. And then I don't think he was called for offsides the next play. I think they called it on Nesta. But if you watch the tape, Roche was offsides again. So he lined up offsides two plays in a row, which is just, dude, like, I don't even – I'm rubbing my eyes right now because I don't even have words for it, you know. And then Amari Carter, dude, like – can you go a game without a targeting penalty?
I can't even remember. Did he get kicked out?
Yeah, he got ejected.
Oh my dude, is that like number four?
It feels like number 1,000. Honestly, yeah. I feel like I feel like he's been ejected from more games than he's finished.
For real, like, man. Like, I mean, I know last year. You had the UNC game and the Virginia game for sure, but it just seems like this is like such an ongoing thing. Like, and after a while, like you could blame oh, the refs suck ass or whatever. But like, dude, you got to know that.
Yeah.
Like you got to be more aware.
Yeah. And, you know, like I actually didn't have a problem with any of the calls. There was the one where, you know, people have showed the clip of we're on a field goal block. Clemson lined up over the long snapper. So like that stuff is lame, but I didn't have a problem with Carter's targeting call. I didn't, you know, I did think that Roche was offsides. He was actually offsides twice in a row, which pisses me off. But dude, like our captains and our veterans and our leaders, they just need to be better than that. You know, like. I like Carter. Well, I like Carter's game. I get very frustrated with the brain farts. Like it at this point, it just feels like most of his career has been a brain fart. But he's a talented player, and I really want him to do well. It's just like, dude, you can't give Trevor Lawrence 15 yards ever.
Yeah, I feel like there were so many there was a lot of false starts and holding. Yeah. And Ja'Kai Clark really struggled, I think, which kind of sucked because I love Ja'Kai. But the mental errors, man, it's like in the first three games, it wasn't bad. But after the bye week and going up, you could tell that the hype of the game got to him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, you could tell that the hype of the game like got inside their heads, especially early on when you come out flat like that, they're buying into that, you know. I was just so pissed off that we played like that.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to spend any more time on it because, you know, we're onward and upward. But damn, like, I want us to come out on Saturday and just beat the shit out of the Panthers. And I'm sorry for the language, but like, I want them to come out pissed off. And you know what sucks is that this game, it's going to be a 10 a.m. kickoff for us, for you know, for you and I in Utah. That sucks. Man. That's so early on a Saturday.
Yeah, it does suck.
Damn it.
And I don't know, man. I'm hoping I just.
Like, I'm not, gotta start getting rowdy at like 7 a.m. in that case.
You know, you just don't sleep.
You want to come over for some breakfast and watch a game?
Yeah, I'm all down.
Right. Maybe. All right.
I haven't woken up before 9 o'clock since I was in high school, so.
I've been waking up at 5 a.m. the last few weeks, and let me tell you, I'm not cut out for it.
I'm not good
at this adulting thing, bro.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm in sales and stuff, and I work for the family business, so my dad is my boss. And he's like, you know, your sales numbers would be a lot better if you could, if you were up and at him by 8 o'clock, like, you know.
That just sounds like something my dad would say. Like, when my dad would wake up, that bastard would wake up like at 4:30 in the morning, go walk our dog for like 5 miles, answer about 100 emails and say, ah, Marsh, rolling out of bed, a little late, huh? Wish you were a little up and at him, huh? And he goes like, Marsh, I'm already at 15,000 steps for the day. What are you at, lazy ass?
I've already walked 111,000 steps.
Yeah. And meanwhile, he's like walking our dog to Temple Square, which I'm not joking. Like, we would get calls. I know that we're just freestyling a little bit here. But like, for those who don't know, from my house to Temple Square, what would you say? Is that like 4 or 5 miles?
Oh, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. It's no short walk. And my dad was a big man. He was a big guy. And we would get calls from our friends saying, hey, just so you're aware, your dad is at Temple Square with the dog. Like, oh, I hope he's not going to kill her. And I would still be in bed. And I'm waking up early these mornings. And I'm just not cut out for it, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I was headed, is like, you know, my dad saying, hey, if you could be, you know, if you could be grinding by 8 a.m., that'd be really great. I'm just like, you know what?
You're just like, oh, thanks, Dad.
It's like, well, I can pay my bills right now, so I think I'll keep doing what I'm doing.
I'm
good.
Thank God, like, this is the last 10 a.m. kickoff to go through before I move to Miami. It's early.
Yeah, I mean, we might have playing the way we did against Clemson. We might have a few more 10 a.m. kickoffs, man.
Oh God, who do we play after Pitt? Is it Virginia?
No, honestly.
Oh, come on! Don't go to negative town on me.
I've kind of just like buried all the Kane stuff since, like, I needed a break after Saturday night because I don't think I've looked at anything Kane since then. I rewatched Clemson on Sunday morning, and then I have not done anything else Miami related since.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the next game that we have after Pitt is Virginia, and it's at home, which is crazy because we had Virginia at home last year. Thank God we don't have to go up to Charlottesville this year because that place scares the hell out of me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm feeling. Dude, as long as we can just, like, be prepared, if we can get our mentals right, you know, like Marshawn Lynch says, if we can get our mentals right, we can, we should be fine until the Virginia Tech game.
Yeah. That NC State game still kind of scares me, honestly, just because it's on the road, but.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm onward and upward. We are both onward and upward. We're going to beat Pitt. We're going to beat them by 20, 25 points. I'm going to get rowdy, and it's just going to be good. We're going to be fine. We are fine. Nobody's freaking out yet. We're fine, right?
We're good.
We're fine, right, Jordan?
I don't know. Yes. I'm going to say yes. We're fine.
All righty. Okay. Well, on that note, we will be back either tomorrow or Friday, bringing you all the Canes content that you need, all the great reactions. I know that we didn't do a reaction show this week. Just know that Jordan and I, after Saturday, I texted Jordan on Monday saying, bro, I can't do it today.
Yeah.
He's like, I understand. I'm like, oh, I love you.
Yeah. Well, you said, I can't do it today. Let's do it tomorrow. And then I was like, nah, F that. Let's do it Wednesday.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, thank God. And then I think I slept 2 hours last night. I just could not then go to sleep. Can we do a little bit later, like at 5? Okay, how about 6 our time? I'm like, oh, God, you're an angel.
Yeah, man.
And I'm very appreciative of that.
Yeah, no worries, brother. No worries.
All right. Okay, we will be back either tomorrow or Friday. And until then, we love you guys and go Canes.
Yep, go Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast.